I mean, I still can't believe, Craig, that I saw Kamau Bell's very first appearance
his first
ever.
His you very first stuff better than he did of his first set, it seemed like.
I know. And I love that I married somebody who actually has the same sensibility when it comes to, if I tell you that something hurts me, why are you questioning that? Why is it so surprising to you? So that was a very similar comparison that Kamau had to Steve's.
I know we just played the intro to that whole bit, but it was such a powerful first few minutes with you guys talking about that and talking about how, and I know you've talked about this on the show before, you can't really project your feelings onto someone else. They get to feel whatever way they want, and you can't decide that that's not true.
Right. Well, and I think this happened a little bit earlier, too, with Bill and Wendy. We're talking about, we mentioned this with Representative Martwick, that a woman was sentenced to 4 years in jail after she was convicted of murdering her adult daughter who had cerebral palsy. And so I was kind of, I got very wound up, even when we were doing our production meeting today, Craig. It's like I got a little yelly. Even though there was nobody to yell at, I got very angry for the people who judge a parent. And yeah, I mean, it's a horrible story. It's a horrible thing that she did. But what's as horrible is what drove her to do that. But when people hear a story like that, they get very angry and she has to be punished. And I just, you know, again, it's like not that you don't know what it's like. I don't know what it was like to be that mother who did that. But when someone says, I'm in pain, and your reaction is, well, tough, it's not really that bad for you. Or why don't you just save some money and your child will be taken care of? Like everyone sort of projects what I would do, what they would do, how they would handle it.
Right. Without even being fully in the situation. And like you said, Bill and Wendy talked about this. They had a few interesting callers. One of them that actually, Kevin Richter, their producer, sent over to us. It was kind of a nicer call from Nora, who has a special needs child as well. She's a special needs mom. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want to hear a little
bit
please. Of
that.
Okay, cool.
Let me hear that one.
Nora. Hi, how are you?
We're good.
I'm good. I have a son who has special needs autism, and he's home with me. He's 23, and it's not as simple as it sounds financially and everything else because, you know, you're talking like what Steve said, to put aside money for college. Well, we had to go through college. We can, you know, four years is.
He's not your only son, is he? He's not your only child.
Right, I have two other sons. He's right in the middle. So it's, you know, it's just not so simple. We moved here from Missouri and moved back because we've been gone for 24 years. But, you know, we just thought it's time for some extra help. Our oldest son moved to, he lives in Bridgeport now. So, you know, we knew he'd be around and all our extended family, but there was nothing much in Missouri. He was in a daycare program only, and then here, in fact, you probably hear him in the background. He's right next to me, and he's always with me because there's nothing, you know, unless we pay 20-some thousand a year, there's really nothing much out there for him.
No program or anything?
No, I mean, there are programs, and we started them in one, but it was costing, like, it was just, we couldn't continue it. It's just too, you know, and on top of the fact that I can't work, you know, because
you need to take care of him.
Right, and he's a huge handful. You'd love him, but he's a big handful, so.
Nora, I know this may sound like an insensitive question, but since it's the topic, have you and your husband discussed the future when the two of you aren't able to be around to care for him, what the next plan is?
Yes, we have, and there he is talking. We have a will with our oldest son as we wait. Sorry.
No, don't apologize.
That's fine.
With our oldest son is the guardian, legal guardian. But, you know, I feel like, and luckily I'm from a very large family and we have a lot of backup, but unless you've lived with him, you don't really get it.
Yeah.
And that's why we figured as soon as he turned 21, he's the guardian if something happens to, or when something happens to us. And, you know, it would surprise me if he didn't, and he'll outlive us. He's very healthy. And, you know, it's just that he's just, like I said, he's a handful, and it's sometimes, I don't know, it's just hard to say, do this, do that, when there's so much, there's so many other things coming in the way. And, you know, you picture this cute little Down syndrome guy or autism high on the spectrum, but my son is very, very much middle to lower end of the spectrum as far as behavior goes. And it's just, it's not as simple as anybody could ever make it sound. And, you know, it's funny because I was thinking I wanted to write a letter to somebody about this because, in Missouri, there was where we lived, there was a dad that killed his son with special needs and himself. And, you know, I would never, ever resort to that. But
you can understand that, can't you?
Yes, exactly. Yes. So
it's just,
I don't know. I just wanted to chime in. You know,
I'm glad you did. Nora, do you ever get a chance to just get out? I mean, you can't leave your son home alone, so you're with him. Are there times that are there places that he can go where you and your husband or your family members can go out and not worry for a night?
For dinner, he loves food, so we always can take him, or generally, we could never go anywhere where he has to be quiet because he's very loud. But, we get to do that. And then luckily with my family nearby, I have a niece that can watch him here and there. And my son, my oldest son, who's, like I said, he lives in Bridgeport, he comes and watches them once in a while for us too. So it's not as much, you know, it's just not simple. My husband travels a lot, and it's hard to take him to the grocery store. So I have to wait till my husband's home so I can, do all my shopping and all that stuff. So
does insurance cover any of this? Do you not have insurance?
Once they're out of school, it's just a whole different ballgame. And I don't know all the ins and outs in Illinois yet, since we're fairly new to Illinois.
Out of school for a functioning person is a different story than for someone who is not functioning on their own. Who cares if they're out of school?
I agree with you. I often thought that, if he can't do any, if he can't do anything on his own, he's here with me, and he's not able to... because a lot of times you'll see people at Jewel, working, and he's not able to hold a job in any way. His behaviors definitely get in the way. So, it's like I said, I don't mean to be a complainer, but
no,
it's,
you are not.
It's not reading as that at all. Just the opposite. It really.
I mean, Bill and I are amazed that, you do this every day, day in and day out, and you're his mom. Does he give good hugs at least?
Sometimes. he's not much because of the autism, much of a hugger, but he's funny. The thing, we always said he's got the best sense of humor of our three children. So he can, he's definitely got a good personality. You just wish it could be easier for people.
Sure, of course.
As once they're out of school, that's it. My job, once I couldn't work anymore, once he was done with school because we couldn't find the right placement for him. And even so, the hours for the adult care is generally 9 until 3 or 8:30 till 2:30. So it's not real, as far as a full-time job, it's not so easy to get. So, yeah. But, thank you.
Nora,
we
thank
wish you the best.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks a lot.
All right.
I enjoy listening to you.
Thank you, Nora.
Thank you. There's a special place in heaven for you, really. You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
By the way, I love that laugh that Nora had. This is Patty again. That was Bill and Wendy's show earlier today. They were having a conversation about the recent sentencing of a mother in Schaumburg who took the life of her adult daughter who was suffering from cerebral palsy. She was worried. The mother was worried about her own health and, had a mental break. Had made this plan to kill her daughter, kill herself. And this happens more often than any of us cares to imagine, all over the country. And Nora called to talk about both her experience as a mother of a child who is an adult with autism. And she mentioned in that conversation that where she was from in Missouri, there was a dad who took his life and his son's life. We've heard this story right here in the Chicagoland area we talked about this with Stephen Boise from PACT, that there was a dad who took the entire family's lives, all of them, the two adult children with special needs, his wife and his own life. And I wanted to hear somebody else who, by the way, Nora sounds like somebody I hope I am when I grow up someday, because Declan is 10 years old and I'll see him stop at a fence and start playing and rocking back and forth. And, neighbors will look over and think he's being a little strange, but they smile because he's 10 and he's adorable. But when he's Nora's son's age, when he's 23, they're going to think he's weird and standing at their fence, and they're going to want to know why, because Declan's a big kid now. I can't imagine how big he'll be when he's 23. She mentioned there too that she can't take him any place where they have to be quiet. And we are fortunate enough. I want to mention this because I talked one time about a church that I took Declan to, and he loves running up toward the piano and I'll let him get a little bit of ways, like, because he's kind of dancing, he wants to go toward the music, and I'll let him go down the aisle a little bit, but then I kind of guide him back to the rear of the church, and this guy grabbed me one day and said, "You need a leash for that kid, right?" And I said, "Well, you need a muzzle before you talk to the mother of a child with special needs." I want to go back to that because it's the same church we go to now. That was one parishioner who was cranky or grouchy or having a bad day and said that to me. I had a hard time going back for a long time, but Steve, my husband, does take the boys there. And I want to thank all the parishioners at St. Tarsus Church who see my family and are so cool. The priest always stops and talks to my family. And that's the church that we go to. They're very welcoming. They're very cool. And it's a beautiful place to go and celebrate our community and to worship. So that was something that I latched onto with Nora's conversation. We can't really go to places that are, you know, we have to be quiet because Declan wants to make noise. He wants to dance. He doesn't speak. He doesn't talk. So he makes a lot of like grunting noises and screaming noises. He's working on it. He's working on making noises. But I think that what's hard to imagine, and Wendy there said, there's a special place for you in heaven. And Nora laughed, I think, because we've heard that so many times. When you have a child with special needs, people say things like, God only gives special needs children to special people. And that's a sweet thing, and it's a great sentiment. And we, you know, we go through our lives and we try our best. I think what I can't really explain to people is that you're never really allowed to mourn the fact that your life didn't turn out the way you'd hoped, that this beautiful child that you are expecting is never going to live independently. And it's traumatic. There have been studies that have found that mothers with children with disabilities have as much PTSD as someone returning from war. But we're not supposed to. We're supposed to, you know, be in it. We're supposed to take care of our kids, and we're, you know, ready for anything and do our best. And I will be very honest with you. I've never considered hurting my son. I have never considered hurting myself. But in the first year of Declan's life, there were nights when I would lay in the dark wondering what this was going to be like, wondering if I could do this and wondering whether or not I could just disappear. And it didn't mean that I wanted to hurt myself. It didn't mean I wanted to run away. I just didn't want to be. I didn't want to be this mom who would probably never hear her child say mommy or ever see him walk, because at the time they told me he was never going to walk. So when I hear about people being angry at this mom in Schaumburg, I have to tell you, you don't know how hard it is, how scary and terrifying it is. And it's very easy for me to understand how someone can lose hope, how they can be so despondent and unable to latch on to reality. So before you judge, just consider that people in your community are raising children with disabilities. They need just your understanding, just some compassion, and sometimes just a smile. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And I want to thank a lot of our texters and callers who wanted to let us know their thoughts on our conversation about raising a child with a disability. We have Chris on the line who's been holding on for quite a bit. Thank you so much for holding on, Chris. How are you doing?
Patty, please take a deep breath and sit down, for God's sake.
Are you watching me on the live stream?
You make it sound creepy when you say it that way.
All right. Hold on a second. One second. All right. Go ahead. Honestly.
There you go. I needed a break after that last one. That it kind of made me tear up a little myself.
Oh, thank you.
I had a nephew who was born with muscular dystrophy and had challenges. And we never said special because right. That kind of separated him.
Right.
We just said he had different needs.
Right.
It wasn't special to be like, oh, look, he's special. No, he's different. He's like everybody else. He's just different. He needs different attention to his needs.
Right. I often say differently abled. Unfortunately,
there you go.
Yeah, the thing that people recognize the most, or, you know, if I say differently abled, they think I'm being cute about it. Yeah, I agree. I agree completely, Chris. Go ahead.
You know, some people think that you play off that word because it's like, oh, well, whatever makes you feel better. No, it's, you know, because, you know, you thank God for what you have, that your children are healthy. But don't look and go, oh, this is so special. No, just it's different.
Right.
It's different. And it takes a stronger person to be a mother, to be a father to a special needs child. I was an uncle before he passed. But, yeah, to walk in a room and he could just hear your voice and smile, that was great.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate your
call.
Thanks, Patty. Have a great night. I've sat down, by the way, and also I'm breathing. Hey, Pumpkin, how you doing?
Pretty good, Pumpkin.
Thank you.
reverse psychology there.
There you go.
Hey, listen, I just wonder where this judge got his credentials. You know, it's common knowledge, anybody that deals with a person with dementia or, Alzheimer's, if you will, PTSD, stress, you know, whatever, is commonplace for the person that's the caregiver.
Yeah.
And it's a fact that the person with the problem, if you will, definitely outlives the caretaker.
Right.
90% of the time.
Right.
That's amazing.
I know. I had, deep down, I had knowledge of something I felt, and I never said it out loud. And then I was at a luncheon preparing for an event for Special Olympics, and I was with four other moms. Each one of us had children of different abilities. And one of the moms said, "All I know is I can't die first." And it was something I had never articulated. I had never said it out loud. But all of us just started nodding because I know, some of the callers earlier today to Bill and Wendy's show were like, save money, put money away. The problem is, when you say you're going to put your child in the care of somebody else, it's hard to imagine. And believe me, I know there are so many people who do a great job of caring for individuals with disabilities, of all ages. But they're not going to love him the way we do. They won't have the collection of experiences that we have and the kind of care that we have given him, the kind of familiarity he has grown. It takes somebody learning every single time that they come into contact with him of what his nuances are, what the idiosyncrasies are. And, caregivers come and go so quickly. I mean, we've been through, honest to God, Joe, probably about 30 different therapists and babysitters, respite care. I mean, like, so every single time in 10 years, whether it's because someone moved or honestly, one woman, one of the best people we had. Have you ever heard of this series? Tatum just did an interview with a girl named Carly. She didn't start being able to communicate till she was 12 years old. One of the therapists we had actually worked with her in ABA therapy, and her green card expired, and we weren't able to have her work with Declan anymore. So it's just in the inconsistencies during our 10 years with him. I can't imagine when we're gone how horrible and scary. I mean, it could be great, but it's hard to imagine that it will be the same.
Amen to that. And listen, hey, I don't do this lightly. I'm going to pay you a gigantic comment here. I classify you as the Omnibudsman of the year, okay, as far as diverse topics that you entertain on your program, okay? And to a large extent, there's a but here, to a large extent, you provide a very impartial viewpoint.
Oh,
that's to your credit.
Joe, okay? Thank you.
So you're scintillating, you're interesting, keep it up, and hey, God love you for living with what you have, kiddo.
Joe, I want to thank you for always being there to add to the conversation, to make sure that another voice is heard, that maybe other people are like just angry or frustrated with something and they don't chime in. People who just text in and it's a one-way conversation. Joe, you're always prepared to start something up, whether it's on my side or somebody else's side, and I like that.
Keep it up, kiddo.
You too, Joe. Have a good night.
Adios.
Talk to you later. I called him Joe. Thank you, Joe. That was nice. Very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
I should have given Joe something.
Well, and you're getting a lot of text messages, too, from people saying, thank you so much for sharing that. What a great show. What a powerful message. A lot of people are chiming in to say. And, as you said, a lot of us don't understand. We can't put ourselves in your shoes from the 847. We should always walk in someone else's shoes, but we really shouldn't criticize people. We should always try to walk in someone else's shoes, but we shouldn't criticize people. So, there's a lot to it to try to understand, but I don't know.
It's and the rage that you feel, like we all have things in our lives that have happened that we don't even know until it's triggered that sets us off on something. I know that I can have a short fuse, and I don't think it's just attributable to being, the struggles of trying to wrap my mind around helping out my son, who, again, Declan, for those of you who are new to the show, maybe, just turn the radio on and are wondering about Declan. He has a disorder called hypoplasia of the corpus callosum, which means that part of his brain never formed in utero. They don't know why. There may have been a cyst blocking it. I may have gotten a virus that crossed the placenta. It happens in the first trimester. Everything that your brain is and ever will be happens in the first trimester. So the foundation of your entire neurological neurological system happens then. So if it doesn't appear then, if it does not progress, it affects you globally. So it affected his lung formation. It affected a lot of his organs. Actually, it also affected, apparently, you know, his muscle development. Declan has severe scoliosis. He has hypotonia, which means that his muscles are a little bit weaker. He's never been able to fully get, you know, the kind of muscle control. And it's hampered by the fact that his brain can't quite communicate what to do next. It always cracks me up when I go to put his socks on and he'll give me his hand. And there's this great story. People always tell me when they're familiar with the corpus callosum, they always ask if I've heard the story about this this man who had an injury to his corpus callosum. His wife takes him to the to see the doctor, seeing the specialist. And the doctor, you know, the guy is talking pretty well and he seems high functioning. And the doctor asks, well, what are some of the symptoms? And she said, well, when I, you know, when he wants to put on his hat, she'll watch this. And she says, honey, put your hat on. And he puts his hand on her head because he knows that the hat's supposed to go on his head, but he can't make his muscles really respond to the thoughts that he's having. There's a disconnect there. And for Declan, because the thinning fibers are in the frontal lobe, we don't know actually his quality of comprehending language, of where he'll actually be able to progress, because your brain is always learning. And we hope that someday he'll find a pathway to communicate, to express himself. But he does not speak. He has, again, a lot of physical struggles, a lot of physical struggles. He was not able to walk until he was almost 3 years old, which was so exciting. Day, I mean, there's nothing like watching a child who has a walker, right? Declan was, you know, a toddler with a walker, and which was, you know, so strange to me, this world of, okay, at least we got to the walker part, because he didn't crawl till he was like a year and a half, didn't pull himself to standing till he was about 18, 19, 20 months old. And I was so excited. And still, even then, we were never quite sure he would ever be able to take a step by himself. And so he had a walker, and it was just the sweetest thing. The day we were able to sort of like pull the walker away from him and watch him take a step without it. And he, like, to have him walk toward the walker and, you know, give him the walker back, because, you know, he's a 3-year-old trying to get his confidence, and pull the walker away from him a little bit more and have him walk to it, and then, you know, take a couple more steps. And this kid loves to walk. He is a walker. He gets excited when he's got like an open field. He like starts giggling and he starts running in the grass. And it's the greatest thing for me, because here's a child who told me he might never walk. And I will walk with him whenever I have the opportunity to just keep going, whether it's along the beach or on a hiking path. Man, and he loves to go toward water. That's the scariest thing for me. So that's my Declan, my 10-year-old Declan, who I cherish. I hope to never come to the path of fear that this mother in Schaumburg experienced. I have been on that path of desperation, of, you know, trying to find my way back to the light. But again, this woman who was sentenced to 4 years in jail, I can't even imagine. She's just, I wish that there was a way to explain to people who want someone to suffer when they've taken the life of their child in this manner. Again, it happens all over the country. I'm sure it happens all over the world. I hear stories about this all the time. It's why I started a company called With Kind Words, in part to help medical professionals hear the warning signs of people who are in danger of hurting themselves and hurting their loved ones who have a disability. I think that there are warning signs. I don't know all of them, but if you have someone in your life who has this struggle, you know, because they, and by the way, they in public, they may come across as being completely in control and everything is fine. And I've got this, I've totally got this. I've got everything handled. But I think there are moments if they say things, especially if they ever worry about whether or not it was their fault. If they latch onto, this is the one thing I can tell you. If you come across somebody who is really consumed by guilt that whatever their child has was their fault, whether it's the mother or the father, if they're convinced that it was their responsibility, just, you know, listen to them and don't downplay that or brush it aside, but listen to them and listen to those words and try to find a way in that. And it's so hard not to set like to be dismissed. Oh no, I'm sure it wasn't your fault, or you know, it happens all the time. And but listen to them, because they're not asking for your absolution. They're asking for their own. They're trying to find a way out of that guilt. So that's one thing that I think is a warning sign. Hey, Steve, how are you doing? Steve?
Yeah. Oh, hi. I didn't hear it, Patty.
Yeah.
Yeah. My wife worked in mental health for 25 years. And I would take a lot of her different residents out on my own time, whether it be DD or cerebral palsy or, but I mean, a lot of them are higher functioning than people think.
Right.
And I want to share this with you one particular night, Ronnie Taylor, because that was his name.
Uh-huh. Well done, Steve. I like that. Uh-huh.
I took him down to the little bar he liked to go to, and we had three beers, and we're walking back, and he goes, "How much do you spend in there?" I said, "Well, $7.50." He goes, "I didn't spend a dime. Now who's crazy?"
I like it, Steve. I know. It's those little moments where you see a glimpse of brilliance, too, or maybe always brilliance, as long as we're paying attention, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Never mind. God blessed all of us.
No, I know what you were going to say. You were going to say it's all a moment of perspective, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a kind of thing you could miss, and we should be paying attention.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're used to it. Yeah, you got to see a glimpse of that every day.
I do. I know. Declan cracks me up all the time with the way he sees the world. Thank you so much, Steve.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate it. And by the way, I don't know if I can finish that thought that I was commenting on parents who feel responsible for causing their child's disability. I really, again, it's a gnawing at your soul that never really goes away. I have put it away, but I had it for a long time, especially in the first year. And, you know, I would go over it and over it in my mind. Like, did I have the boys too close to each other? Did I work too much? Did I not eat the right food? I came down to like thinking, what if I shook hands with somebody? And, you know, because I was doing stand-up comedy clubs, what if I exposed myself to germs that then, you know, became an infection or something? I mean, like, I would go through every different scenario. Maybe I once picked up something that was too heavy, or, you know, all these different things. And there's one thing that I remember, and I always tell Nurse Sarah, she always cracks up because she's like, "Would you stop thanking me?" One of the nurses in the special care nursery at Resurrection Hospital, it was Nurse Sarah, she goes, "Fine." She goes, "All right, you know, go through all the different scenarios, but let me tell you one thing. Regret is a wasted emotion. There's nothing to be earned from it." She's like, "It's not about what happened. It's about what you're going to do." And that's something I go back to whenever I start to sink into that sort of pit of wondering. Once in a while, it pops back up. And I don't know if it ever will go away completely. But as long as I acknowledge it and know that it's there and deal with it and then assume responsibility for the things I'm going to do, I think that's where I can find some strength. So just a little bit of that. All right. Who are we calling, by the way? Do we know who we're calling tonight? We called Cochran last night.
Yeah, I thought we were going to call John.
I know. Do we call John Cass tonight? I'm not sure if I feel like Cranky
now,
Cass.
Yeah, now tonight is Cranky it feels Cass. Like different.
I know. Oh, well, we're going to call Kamau on Friday, so.
Right.
Oh, we probably. I shouldn't have said that out loud. Some people are going to warn him or something.
No, don't warn Kamau.
Didn't Stephanie say that she was going to give you some phone numbers?
Yeah.
Did she get any of those to you?
Not quite yet, but I believe they're on the way at some point soon.
I wish we could. I think
it's awkward for people to give up these phone numbers because they know what we're going to do with them.
I know. Poor Kamau didn't realize when he gave us his number.
I mean, look at Scott Stantis because that's.
Oh, let's call Scott Stantis.
Okay, let's do that.
All right, then. More after this on 720 WGN.